all of his mama step each and every day in the newspaper. How are you, bud?
Hey, Matt, how you doing? What a beautiful day this is, right? And this is a heck of a football game.
It's been a pretty good game. And, you know, one of the things that, as we'll take a couple minutes here with Albany leading 14-10, you think about how this game has gone. Monmouth has put together two good scoring drives, kind of methodical drives, and Albany has just had that quick play, quick strike ability that right now has them a four-point lead.
Even though it's not a wildly high-scoring game at the half, don't you get the feeling that maybe whoever has the ball last is going to have a real good chance, because both offenses have certainly shown that they can move the football. And it's going to be very important to start the third quarter. Albany is going to get the ball. And as this game continues to progress, from a Monmouth point of view, you want the Hawks to stay preferably ahead. They could get the lead, or at least, you know, no more than
one score
behind. Uh-huh. And yeah, Albany's very good, but what a big goal line stand for Monmouth at the end of the half to going down only 14-10 as opposed to, you know, being down maybe 21-10 or even 17-10. Goal line stand could stand out in bold relief here before this thing is over.
Tony Graham giving us a couple of minutes here at the half with Albany leading Monmouth 14-10. You know, Tony, it's been such an interesting year for Monmouth here football-wise. They are 5-4 overall after a three-win year a year ago. So there's been improvement for sure. But the problem, as you have noted and Steve Edelson has noted in stories and columns and blog reports, is the inability to win at home.
Right.
Four games this year plus two last year, a six-game losing streak. I mean, you don't really see that too often, especially when the team has a winning record overall.
It's really unusual. I mean, I don't know that I am sure it's happened in collegiate football. It may have even happened at some point for some other team this year. But be interesting to for somebody. I'll nominate Greg Viscomi for that.
I know you're not nominating yourself.
Well, he would have the access to the NCAA records and more access to all things NCAA as a sports information director. If that trend, you know, hopefully it doesn't, if that trend should continue after today or even going into today. But I think a lot of it, Matt, to be honest with you, is who they've played. I mean, they played on the road. They played last week they played St. Francis.
Yep.
And they figured to win that game. Had that game been here this year, they probably would have won it here. Sometimes it's just a matter of scheduling. Villanova, and that's a great win for Monmouth, don't get me wrong, at Villanova. But this has not been a Villanova team that's talking football of a FCS mm-hmm. national championship of caliber team, which they have had over the years. So that game is here. Maybe Monmouth wins that game. So I think a lot of that has to be. Fans like to believe that they have an influence on the game, and to some extent they do. But I think in this particular instance, it's more who they've played and where they've played them. It's just fallen into the situation where the tougher games, Lehigh, a top echelon program this year in FCS, was here. Colgate, always a tough opponent for Monmouth or any Northeast Conference school, that was here. The game that really could come back to haunt Monmouth was a Robert Morris game.
That's right.
A very, very winnable game. Robert Morris has struggled since beating Monmouth here at Kessler Field. And, you know, Monmouth penalized over 130 yards in that game. And that one really hurts, not only the fact it was a home loss, but also Monmouth would be one game better in the standings and be somewhat in control of their own fate had they been able to prevail in that game. So that's the game that really could come back to bother Monmouth at the end of this year as far as the home defeats go.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough uphill battle for Monmouth to figure out a way to win the NEC championship. They could come up with a share of it, but in terms of representing the league in the FCS playoffs, which is everybody's goal now, they need everything to go their way, which includes a win today and next week, and then Duquesne losing to Sacred Heart this week and Robert Morris next week. It seems unlikely, but still mathematically still alive. What about Craig Peterson? We talked a little bit about him during the course of the game, and he's such a good story. We had him on the Kevin Callahan show this past Tuesday. He's having a great day today, 18 of 23, 145 yards, and that touchdown pass. I mean, he's really been the story, in a way, the last three or four games for Monmouth. They have kept their head kind of above water, and he has played really well.
At any level of football, whether it's high school, college, the NFL, when your, quote, backup quarterback can come in and play, you know, almost as well, and he has really almost as well as Kyle Frazier, and you can have that from your backup quarterback, and you really don't lose a beat. He's helped Monmouth. He hasn't hurt them. Not saying he's Kyle Frazier, but he's proven to be a very good quarterback in this league over the last couple of weeks. Craig Peterson has. And if you can do that, and the way it's developed for him, I mean, that's a real plus for any program. And, you know, looking forward into next year, I think, you know, Kyle Frazier, you said, had the surgery. He's had the surgery. He'll come back. He's, got to be penciled in as number one, certainly going in. But now you have that comfort of having a very capable quarterback behind him and Craig Peterson if he's needed again next year. And who knows, in spring ball, they may have a spirited battle.
Might make for an article for you to write.
For a good story. We'll have to ask Kevin about that. But I think, you know, Kyle Frazier is the starter. And assuming he comes back and he's had the surgery, and you don't know, you still have to see him in spring ball if he does participate in spring ball and see how he's reacted and what his progress is going to be. So we'll see. But it's a good situation for Monmouth to have going into next year. And projecting forward, and I'm not scrapping this year by any stretch of the imagination, I think it's very important for Monmouth that they at least have a winning season this year, which would be a nice bounce back from the last couple. And going into next year, they lose, I believe, two starters on defense and one on offense. And granted, Jose Gumbs very important on defense, but nonetheless, you have the bulk of the team returning on both sides of the ball. And this offense really could be something, whether it's Craig Peterson, the quarterback, for the battle, he'll be for the balance of this year, but whether next year he's the quarterback or Kyle Frazier is the quarterback, whoever it turns out to be. I mean, Neil Sterling is almost unguardable in this league. I mean, he's just such an athlete. He towers over defensive backs. He can run. He doesn't drop the ball. He can go over the middle. He makes the tough catches. And you've got, you know, Mitchell Pollard back again next year. Tristan Roberts back. Your tight ends are all back.
Yep.
Your offensive line is back. This could be, you know, projecting ahead going into next year. I can see Monmouth definitely challenging for the FCS bid.
Well, let's say that Monmouth wins today, wins next week, finishes up 7-4, or win one of the next two at 6-5. On some level, a winning record.
Right.
A good year, you'd have to say, for Monmouth.
Yeah. I think so. Remember, they were picked. It seems whenever Monmouth is picked near the bottom of the league in preseason, that's when they really rise up and do their best. Those preseason rankings are, you know, they're fun to do, yeah, but in the end, they're fairly meaningless. So, you know, it's been a fun. It's been certainly frustrating because they lost a couple of games that they could have won. It's been frustrating for the fans here at Kessler Field to see them lose these games, and hopefully they will turn it around today. Yeah, probably. If not the biggest crowd today, one of the biggest, as the end zone bleachers are filled here today, or just about filled, and you haven't seen that too often. So while it's been frustrating and they've lost a game or two, they could have won. It's a young team and it's developed, and you can see it getting better week by week by week. So, you know, the outlook is bright here for football now at Monmouth. I think, you know, toward the end of this year and into the next couple of years now.
Tony Graham from the Asbury Park Press here. Matt Harmon, Eddie Acapinti on the broadcast today on the Shore Sports Network. 14-10 the score in favor of Albany. You say, Tony, and before we change gears, I know we want to talk some basketball as well. Last football question. You talk about the future, and one of the things, obviously, you have an opinion, as does your colleague Steve Edelson, and just about anyone who follows Monmouth football, about the facility here at Monmouth. The future, you would think, in terms of making that next leap, has to start here with some kind of redevelopment of Kessler Field.
Well, it has to start here, and it also has to start in the scholarship commitment. The way I believe Monmouth has around 30 scholarship equivalents now. The league allows you 36. Albany, I was told, has 36. A couple other schools have 36. Monmouth has to, you know, come up with, I mean, to be fair to Kevin Callahan and the staff, if Monmouth isn't at 36 now or 38 next year, they really should be close to that, because that's what the other teams in the league are doing. Not all the teams. Others, as Kevin Callahan likes to say, we have more than some, less than others. So not all the teams have. Duquesne is published at 28. That they published that report. So Monmouth may have a scholarship or two more than Duquesne. So first, I think they've got to bolster the scholarship situation a little bit. But also, as you say, the field here at Kessler. It's a nice field, but Central Connecticut is, I think you were there,
yep,
right? They're renovating their stadium. Albany is groundbreaking for a new stadium.
Yep.
Robert Morris has a new stadium. If you're going to compete in your league, you know, you have to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, or in this case, the Robert Morrises and the Albanys and the Central Connecticut. So they have to do something with this field. They talk about doing something with the press box. You talk about doing something with a press box would be okay. No problem with that.
Yeah, that'd be all right, wouldn't it?
But I think, you know, more importantly, to get some stands on the other side of the field, they have to go through West Long Branch to do anything on the other side of the field. And so that situation has to be addressed. They don't have to build an 18,000-seat stadium. You don't have to build a 12,000-seat stadium. But, you know, for this program, the permanent seats in the end zone, a couple thousand seats on the other side, And I'm not going to sit here and say I know how exactly they should do it or could do it. But and the bottom line is they really need to do that over the next couple of years to keep up with the teams, at least in their league, and also to promote Monmouth football, but also make it attractive to recruits. I mean, recruits go to other stadiums. They go to Monmouth recruits against Delaware. And yep. and that liking good in Delaware. That's a, you've been there. That's pretty impressive.
That's a big
that's
place.
That's a big time place. So you're not going to have that here, but at least within the you know the structure of your league, you have to have a facility that is as good, if not better, than most of the facilities in the league. And you know that is one aspect. That is not the overall end all be all for a recruit. But I think it has something to do with it. Certainly, Monmouth now with its basketball programs doesn't have to worry about the facility being an issue. They've got the nicest facility in the Northeast Conference and one of the nicest facilities on the Eastern Seaboard at this level or really any level. Mm-hmm. So that is not an issue. That has to help. So you want to have something similar to that here at Kesslerfield. I just think it's important for Monmouth football.
Well, let's talk a little bit about basketball as we transition from football, who is trailing Albany right now 14-10. A couple of minutes with Tony Graham. Last night, the season opener and the new era of King Rice basketball here in Monmouth. Final score, maybe not indicative of the whole game. I was able to catch a little bit of it driving back from the NEC soccer tournament. We'll spend a minute on that as well. And the first half sounded fairly competitive. The second half, as maybe you would expect, Villanova was able to distance the lead, and the score wound up being lopsided. But in your opinion, a good start for King Rice and Monmouth, promising things?
I thought it was an encouraging start. You know, when you play those teams, and you know this over the years, often it's a physical mismatch. I mean, Monmouth has its small guard, 6 feet and under. Only one guard was under 6'6" for Villanova, and that was the kid, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name. But, you know, everybody, all their other guards were over 6'6", and the 6'2 guard was like an all-league guard, yep. and a returning leading scorer. Malik Wands, I think, is close to the pronunciation there. So, and then they had the big-time 6'10 center, and Phil Waite played well for Monmouth, but he got in foul trouble. So, in looking at the game, you know, I tried to project it, not as the fact that they're playing, you know, a Big East team, but how does this Monmouth team look as opposed to what, you know, the competition is going to be in the Northeast Conference. And I thought the guard play was really good. I thought Jesse Steele shone as a point guard. He had no turn. And this is a team that's going to run and press now, Monmouth. And they were up-tempo with mm-hmm. the likes of Villanova. And they had 15 assists and 16 turnovers, which against a Villanova club, it's not bad. I mean, being really athletically mismatched. And Jesse had a really good game at the point. Deion Nesmith was close to a revelation here in his first collegiate game. 10 points, a couple of rebounds, a couple of steals, a couple of assists. I liked Austin Tillotson, the freshman from Pennsylvania, since I've seen him in practice. And he looks like he's going to be a comer and be a nice player. Will Campbell is Will Campbell. He might bobble the ball here and now and then, but he's also capable of a very big game. So I think they're solid at guard. Phil Waite in the Northeast Conference should be, assuming he's okay, hurt his wrist a little bit last night. I think it's okay. I don't know that for sure, but I think it is. He should be a dominant player at 7 feet in the North. He was 5 for 5 from the floor last night when they were able to get him the ball inside. He played well. And then up front, Red Nicholas, Andrew Red Nicholas, came off the bench. And for a player that doesn't apparently shine all the time in practice,
yeah,
he really had himself a nice game. What I really liked about Nicholas, along with the 8 points, was his court awareness. He shot the ball well, but he also can see the floor, made some nice passes, a beautiful dish inside to a teammate for a layup. And he's a player that, in my mind, is rapidly climbing up in the rotation. So he could be a factor before this year's out. Again, you go by the final scores, and you know, Villanova, it's not going to be good. Now they got Virginia Tech of the ACC on Monday and in the NIT, preseason NIT. And Villanova was picked 10th or so by the media in the Big East. Virginia Tech in the ACC was picked 6th. So you really jump from the frying pan into an even hotter. You don't even go into a fire. You go into a much hotter frying pan if that's possible.
Yep.
So now you go there. So I think after that, you know, they'll give whatever they can give on Monday night, and after that they probably play Florida International, assuming they lose to George Mason in the consolation there, and then they go into a little pod in the NIT, which apparently will include Albany, Manhattan,
I think Brown's in there,
Brown's in there, and you know, at that point, you start to play those type of teams, and you get a better idea of how Mammoth should fare in the Northeast Conference. And I think in the Northeast Conference, they were picked 10th. I have to believe, from what I saw last night, they're going to be higher than that. They should, in my mind, at least make the NEC tournament and maybe make a little noise. What impressed me last night among the NEC scores, we don't know how good Ryder is this year, but Robert Morris belted Ryder last night, 83-57. So I think the NEC last night went 2-4 in non-conference play. But overall, I'm pretty optimistic about going into the season for Monmouth Mantoops. It is interesting the way they're playing, up tempo, run the ball, push the ball, and that should lead to more points. You're going to give up a couple more points when you play that way, but the players enjoy playing this way, and it comes down to really being an athletic contest. And Monmouth has the guards, I think, to compete with anybody in the NEC, and if their front court can gel as well, I think it'll be a fun year.
Well, it should be a lot of fun, and we'll look forward to following all the action with you, of course, through the Asbury Park Press and Hawk's Nest, which is your blog. Tony, thanks for swinging by, giving us a couple minutes. Enjoy the rest of the second half.